supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome to Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. Hey, a friend of mine tells about a story about when she was in a restaurant before she had children, and she saw an out-of-control toddler. She said to herself, why can't they control their child? What's wrong with them? Anyway, I would do it differently. And then she had her own kids, and 2 years later, I'm sure people were staring at her, thinking the same thing. All of us parents have felt out of control with their kids on occasion. But sometimes things get desperate and they stay out of control. That's when we need help. For the last 10 years, parenting expert Joe Frost has been coming in to help with crisis situations like this. She was the star of an extremely successful reality show, Super Nanny. But she's also the author of 4 books. The most recent of them is called Toddler Rules. And we're going to get to some of those toddler rules on the show today. Joe, it's great to have a chance to talk with you today. Welcome.
Oh, thank you very much for having me. Thank you.
And if you'd like to join our conversation, the number is 888-477-9499. Again, that's 888-477-9499. If you've got a toddler, I've no doubt you have questions. Give us a call. Joe, let's define that right in the beginning. So what age range are toddlers?
I write from the age of 1 to 5.
Okay.
And that's what I call the toddler ages, where we're laying down foundations and creating good habits.
So I want to talk about discipline here. What do you mean by discipline, and why do you think it has such a bad reputation these days?
Well, I mentioned in my book, Dan, the importance of understanding as parents our job to discipline, so to give consequences. For a child to learn very early on, as we guide them, the difference between right and wrong, and to understand through our teachings that cause and effect, when you behave a certain way, there is a consequence, which ultimately becomes a discipline. A parent will discipline a child. But what I have noticed amongst the very common issues of not wanting to discipline as a parent, you work many hours and you feel when you come home, it's the last thing you want to do. Some parents have told me that they feel awful inside, that they feel bad to have to discipline their children. But it is a responsibility of ours to be able to teach our children, which ultimately means that being a parent who can raise our child with positive child rearing, we need to understand that discipline is a part of that. However, in saying so, there is a silent epidemic.
Which is?
Of a silent epidemic of child abuse, mentally, physically, sexually, emotionally. And I've spoken to many a parent in the 50 states of America, and I've been lucky enough to travel to 47 of your beautiful country, and to realize that a lot of these parents are actually restricted, because when we mention the word discipline in this country, parents automatically think of this very harsh, strict image of a parent who is unreasonable,
a parent
who is extreme.
They also think in terms of spanking, and, you know, that's...
Correct, and that's exactly the image. The image of paddling, spanking, popping, all these different words that I've heard, you know, and these the terminologies, these words of, so of basically inflicting pain on a child.
So, Joe, what does discipline mean? And I want to come back to that word pain. You know, we don't want to inflict pain on our child, but sometimes when we discipline them, they experience emotional pain or loss.
Well, when a child experiences discipline, what they experience is a parent giving that child a consequence. Now, it doesn't mean that emotionally they are in distress, that psychologically we have damaged the child, that we have detached them, that we have... It doesn't. But that's the mindset and the taboo, Dan, of people's thinking today, of parents thinking that they are doing some kind of damage because it's so polarizing.
It sure...
You know, you've seen me for so many years in the homes of American parents teach parents how to implement with kindness, with being respectful, with manners, with showing no grudge after, that when we behave a certain way, there is a consequence.
Actually, I want to do that. I want to introduce a clip right now that begins showing how you actually do it. Let me just reintroduce you. We're talking with Joe Frost. If you don't recognize the voice, she starred in the reality TV show Super Nanny, and she's written 4 books, and the most recent is Toddler Rules. Her take, Joe, your take on parenting and childbearing is clear, is forthright. It's great, you know, what you talk about, you know, holding up a mirror to parents, you know, that's what therapists need to learn also. Anyway, our phone number is 888-477-9499. That's 888-477-9499. So, Joe, on your show, you talked about, I mean, one of the clips is about a toddler that keeps running into the street and doesn't listen. And, you know, at that age, you know, it's, you know, children want independence. But the parents have 2 different approaches. I wonder if it would be okay with you if we played a couple of minutes of this?
Yes, I wouldn't know which clip you're playing, but by far, please do.
Okay, all right. Well, you don't need to know specifics, but it's going to bring up some questions and issues that I'm sure we can both chat about. So, Adam, let's hear that clip.
I think I do a lot of things right, and I kind of want somebody to chime in and point out really where I think Joy's shortcomings are. She doesn't agree with what I'm doing. She'll jump in and she'll show the children that mom and dad don't agree.
That's correct. Him and mom should be on the same page. But does he really think I'm going to give him a gold star because he bullies his children?
I grew up in a wonderful family. I never saw my parents argue because my mom was content to step back and let my dad rule the house.
There's no way that dad can expect me to be in his corner. Before I left for the night, though, I did need to hear Mom's take on the situation.
They're kids, and they don't need to have the yelling and the, you know, the loss of temper. So if at any point I ever thought that it was better for the kids for me to take them and for us to be apart, would I do it? Absolutely.
She's in a desperate situation because she knows what she needs to do if things don't change, and she's scared that she's going to have to walk down that road. The stakes are incredibly big here in this family. I've seen plenty, and I can't wait for tomorrow to come because I need to sit down and have a serious conversation with the Potter family. Let me start by telling you both that it takes a lot of courage to come to the table because some of the issues we will talk about, they're not a rosy picture.
Yes.
No.
There are parental issues. The kids are suffering for it. And that, for me, is incredibly sad. Let's talk about discipline because I know that there's been much heated conversation with regards to what do we do with discipline when we see the kids being disrespectful.
So what do we do about discipline? And I'm not going to ask you specifically about that family, but...
Oh, I remember them, Dan. I remember them. The Potter family, dear to my heart, actually. A wonderful outcome for this family, wonderful outcome.
Well, you remember them after all the thousands of families?
I do.
Oh, my,
I do.
Oh, my God.
Such a personal journey, Dan, for these families.
Bless your heart and your wonderful memory. Boy, I want to play into that memory. But go on. Tell me what happened with this family.
The Potter family, Joy was just stuck in a real dilemma because she felt that she had done everything possible in her power to put across and relay the importance of her and her husband being on the same page, talking about their principles, talking about their values, talking about how she felt the kids should be disciplined and what was reasonable and realistic and how they were being unrealistic and reasonable. And her husband had not had the best of upbringings. It had been very dysfunctional. And he had not learnt much about that at all and thought that was his norm. And so there were many a circumstance where his own projection of his own upbringing that had been very dysfunctional had been relayed onto the children, been projected onto the children.
Joe is, as a family therapist, I see that every day. No matter what kind of family children grow up in, they think that's normal because it's the only one they know. And I was taught, my student days were many years ago, but one of my first mentors said that the function of a family is to produce children who go out and recreate the family. Well, that sets up difficulties, doesn't it? And this is just what we saw with the Potter family.
So very true. So very true a statement. And that's why it's important for these families when we are in that space of being able to discuss, to give them a space so that they can be very truthful, so that they can be very honest with themselves, so that they can take a piece of what they know from their own past and really identify how it is getting in the way and creating a lot of damage and dysfunction in their own family.
This family were
crying out for help because they weren't getting anywhere. As much as the conversation was happening, it was one-sided. We had a man who didn't want to listen to his wife with what she was saying. There was a lot of ego in the way, a lot of I'm right, and no one's happy.
Yeah, I notice with these families, or most of us, we pretend we know what we're doing. But let me ask a question through the lens of a psychotherapist here. So I see this, Joe, and I see a dysfunctional family, a dysfunctional couple, and that relationship needs to be improved. They need to get more understanding and respect for one another. But we have a child here who's really suffering, and that really can't wait. So how do you view this, and how do you intervene?
By literally sitting them both down and actually having a discussion and actually mediating between the couple how they want to raise their children together, what they feel comfortable with and what they don't feel comfortable with, what they have addressed but hasn't been heard, what was said but what wasn't walked, you know, talk a lot of talk but not walk the walk. And it's about being able to bring them both together in a space where a lot of parents will tell you, we don't have the time to talk. We haven't got the time. Every time we sit down and argue, every time we sit down and we talk, to really mediate between both couples. You know, undoubtedly, Mr. Potter needed to realize his own upbringing and things that he needed to learn as he had become a man that hadn't separated from a lot of issues that had gone on in his life as a child, but independently as a father. It was imperative that he sit down and talk to his wife with respect to the issues that we were identifying with their own children,
you know, Joe,
and how they were going to work together in resolving those.
Joe, you know what I love about, I'm going to take a small piece out of this, and you address this in your book, Toddler Rules, that you have them, I don't want to overlook what you said, you have them sit back and talk about what parenting means to them, what having a child, what kind of outcome they want for their child and how to get there. And this is something parents don't do, and it is essential. I think parents need to do this before they have a child, and they even,
absolutely,
they even need to ask each other, what does it mean to be in a relationship? What does family,
absolutely,
mean? These questions. And unfortunately, they don't get asked, and I think they would solve an awful lot of problems, Joe.
Yes, well, I also think there's, you know, I also think, talking to young couples who are together, I also think there's so much conflicting advice. And you see these, you know, magazines that are out there, these monthly magazines that people subscribe to, and it's like, how to hold on to a woman, how to hold on to a man, or, don't discuss family yet, you'll make him run away, or how to... You have to be honest and authentic in a relationship, Dan, you know?
Joe, before we go to the phones, I've got to ask you this question. How did we ever do it before pop psychology? How did we ever raise children before we had all this crazy input from people, starting with Spock in the 1950s, creating child-centered families? How... You know, my God, we did it.
We relied, didn't we, Dan? We relied on extended families. We learned a lot from our family members, and maybe some of it wasn't brilliant and some of it was great, you know, and we certainly looked up to those that had experience it within our families and network as extended, those that were raising 6 and 7 children.
Yeah.
And we made decisions, you know, decisions were made, and we learned from those decisions,
yeah,
and the outcome sometimes absolutely brilliant, and other times it was like, whoops,
yeah,
not a good idea, that one, let's try again.
And we survived all of the mistakes. Let's go to the phones, we've got a lot of people who want to join the conversation. We'll start with Devin. Hi, Devin.
Yes, hi. I have 3 children, twin girls, they're identical, and I'm wondering if you have any strategies for parents of twins, you know, with slightly different personalities.
How old are they, Devin?
They are. They turned 3 in February.
All right. I want to give Joe's job a little easier. Be a little more specific. What are the issues,
yes,
you struggle with?
Well, one of my twins is very sensitive, and so, you know, certain types of discipline are very well and easily received, and my other twin sort of looks at me already like a high school girl, with that kind of blank, whatever, mom, look on her face. So I'd like to be, you know, consistent as a parent, but I'd also like to be effective.
Joe, it's all yours. It's all yours.
Devin, this is how I want you to look at things. Hello, lovely to meet you. I've worked
Thank
with
you.
Many, many, you know, as a professional nanny and as a consultant, and then as somebody in America helping along the many shows with twins. And you've hit the nail right on the head. If you are consistent with your values, if you are consistent with what your house rules are, if you are consistent in the way you raise your children, then each and every one of those 3 girls are getting that equally from you. Their personalities and their temperaments are going to be different, and that's the beautiful thing. And we want to be able to have an individual relationship with each one of your triplets because they are unique in their own sense, in their personalities, in their temperaments. But for you to wish that they all received your consequence, your discipline in the same fashion, is to be unrealistic. You know, yes, you've recognized,
yes,
and you have observed that one is a little bit more brazen, a little bit more bold, a little bit more resistant, and one is hypersensitive, and a little bit more wary, and needs more reassurance. And the other one, you know, brushes everything off their shoulders. Doesn't really matter. Are they really listening? Wonderful to identify that, because in how you approach your children based on their temperaments is the relationship that you will bond and evolve with. However, that doesn't stop each one of those children recognizing that a rule is a rule. You know, whether the bikes stay outside or whether the bikes come inside the home. A rule is a rule, whether we sit down at the table and we ask maybe leave, whether we don't.
How do you
are hitting the nail on the head, Devin. You are being consistent.
And
I just think you need to recognize that they're not all going to act the same way. And if you can find peace there, you can continue doing the good work you're actually doing.
And what about the child who is deeply hurt by discipline and the other is not?
I challenge your word, Dan, with the word deeply hurt. Deeply hurt has an impact far beyond 3 minutes sitting on a naughty step or the confiscation of a toy or the non-ability to go to the park, because
that's great.
At that present moment they show emotional upset because you have flipped the script, because you have said this now needs to happen, and they're like, oh, I don't want to. This is not fair as far as they're concerned. I want to do what I want to do because I'm a toddler and I live in my own bubble. So they're not deeply hurt, but parents do think that.
So one of the things, Devin, that Joe is talking about, and I think this is good advice for all parents, regardless of the age of the child, is understand your child's temperament, but don't be hyper-reactive to their every mood. So if they cry, it's okay. And if they're angry, it's okay. Don't be hyper-reactive to all of it. Joe,
Devin will realize that, you know, when you're raising three children, you're not going to keep them all happy at the same time. You know, one might not want to do an activity that the other two are very happy to do. You know, welcome to the life of having triplets.
Right,
that's going
to
be your life.
And
if
your goal is to make and keep them all happy, you're setting yourself up for failure. Joe, we've got to take a short break. When we come back, there's so much more to talk about, and I'd like to play another clip if we can about a toddler. We'll see if we can get to that. If you don't know already, we're talking with Joe Frost. She's a parenting expert. She was the star of her own reality TV show Super Nanny, and you know, she's earned a broad recognition for her stern and yet compassionate approach to children and childcare. Author of 4 books, her most recent is Toddler Rules. Our number here is 888-477-9499. Again, that's 888-477-9499. We have a couple of lines open. Please give us a call and make sure you get one of those lines while they're still open. Well, I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family right here on WHYY-FM.
Beck Institute, internationally recognized source for cognitive behavior therapy, welcomes clients to their Center for Psychotherapy in Bala Cynwyd. Established by Dr. Judith Beck and Dr. Aaron Beck, founder of cognitive behavior therapy, Beck Institute provides effective treatment for challenges including depression, anxiety, stress, and weight management. Details at beckinstitute.org or 610-664-3020. Beck Institute proudly supports WHYY.
Devereaux is a proud supporter of WHYY. For more than 100 years, Devereaux has provided care to individuals with developmental disabilities and mental and behavioral health disorders. Devereaux's work also includes its full continuum of autism-specific programming for individuals of all ages, including residential services, community-based group homes, employment training, and support and educational programs. For more information on Devereaux's autism-specific services, devereaux.org.
We are back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. We're talking about author, star of her own reality TV show, and expert, parenting expert, Joe Frost, who's written many books, and the most recent is Toddler Rules. Joe, let's go right to the phones. We've got Lauren on the line. Hi, Lauren.
Hi, this is Lauren. Nice to talk to you.
You too. What's your question? So, what can we do for you?
I have a four-year-old boy, and he is completely refusing altogether to potty train. And his preschool wants to even hold him back because he's not showing emotional maturity. I've tried the tact of going strong and firm. We did a rewards chart. I also did, I'll call it like a punishment side, where I took privileges away from him for refusing. That didn't work. I took away his favorite things, and that didn't work. And I've tried so many different things. The pediatrician tells me, oh, well, no one makes it to high school, you know, without being potty trained. And I respond, well, good luck to the third grader who isn't, because they're going to be, you know, crucified in school.
Exactly.
I've received different things from his preschool. And now I'm at the point where I've tried firmness. And now I'm at the point where I don't even mention the word potty in my house, because everything I've read now is if children are this obstinate.
All right, so here's what I want you to do. I want you to sit back, catch your breath, and just rest for a couple of minutes and hear what Joe has to say.
Thank you.
Sometimes we need permission, right? Just to sit down for two minutes and breathe when we feel like we're pulling our hair out. I'm feeling frustrated in these circumstances. You mentioned that your child was emotionally undeveloped or mentally?
Emotionally. So that's what his preschool is saying. The preschool says that he is lacking emotional maturity.
I don't know what that means.
No, neither do I. In what capacity? Because at the end of the day, we have to be able to look realistically at the goals that our children are able to reach. Emotional maturity could be with respect to how he receives or interacts on a social level. But does that mean that he doesn't have the mental capacity to sit down for 10 minutes and to resolve a puzzle, to interact with other children and to do mix and match and to look at early stages of phonics? I mean, do they talk about that at all?
Yeah, that
doesn't seem very clear, do they, the school?
That label is, I find most labels just absolutely meaningless and not helpful. So let's talk about potty training for poor Lauren.
If your child, would you say that your child is very good at being able to listen to you and follow instruction? Are they more than adequate in being able to communicate with you and have conversation that's fluid, cohesive, you understand, you're having conversation, he'll talk to you about what he needs from you with respect to, you know, you're asking him questions, whether that's to do with play or the structure of your day or lunch. Do you have that with your son?
We do. He is like any other four-year-old, you know, has his own agenda, but we do have conversations. When we have conversations about the potty, he completely shuts down and either reverts to getting very quiet or getting into like a crying, whining voice where he's like, I don't want to do that. I want to go to bed or some other, you know, escape.
This is what I intuitively feel when I speak to you, is that I can hear just in your own tone that you have a very strong character yourself. You know what you want. You look to how you're going to get that. And you have a child who has your own DNA, a child who has his own strong willness. And I want to question this. I want to go outside the box. If your child feels like he's being controlled to potty train, he'll use that to power play against you. And so rather it being like you teaching him a life skill, which is what you are doing, is to teach him a life skill, I believe he uses this as a power play against you. And so you get into this battle of wills of him not actually achieving the life skill that is necessary, because you end up in despair with him, and that creates more of a cycle that is hard for the pair of you to get out.
Yes.
So how do we get out of this cycle?
May I offer right now, I don't even mention the word. So right now I am radio silent about the topic because I feel like if I try to show him that it doesn't mean anything to me, that I'm disengaging from the power struggle.
Can I ask you how many times you, in inverted commas, tried potty training and then resulted back to him being in diapers?
Oh, geez. Hundreds.
Okay.
Because we started at his third birthday, and now he's 4 1/4.
Okay. Here's what we are going to have to do. There's no doubt in my mind, just hearing what you've had to say, that this is power play. Toddlers want to do what they want to do when they want to do it. And the one thing that frustrates parents is the control that they can have over their own bladder in being able to hold or do when they're supposed to or eating. And so the most important thing you're going to have to do is go back to the book and recognize that you have to untangle every goalpost that you moved when you set the pace to potty train and then went back. Because now we have a battle of wills. So if each time you make a stance in saying, today we're going to learn how to potty train because you're so ready to do this as a big boy, and you see resistance and you give up and you go back to the diapers, he knows that it's not something that he has to push through and get to the other side with, because you then get frustrated and give in and then go back to the diapers. And what he's going to do is to fight ultimately, because it's what he is doing, what he needs to learn, what is good for him, the life skill that he's more than ready to be able to do.
Joe, do you recommend he put on big boy pants, even if he's not trained, that he just wet his pants?
And here's what I would say. When you have recognized today is the day that I need, today is the day that I need to follow through, come what may, I need to follow through, then that is the day that you start. And when you start, you cannot then pack in,
so
call it a day, and go back to diapers.
Give us an example. So, what does that look like, Joe?
It looks like this. Tomorrow, darling, we're going to do potty training. You're going to have to come with a whole new set of selling skills, okay? Clean the slate from the place where you were at, which was frustration, and now him realizing that he's got your negative attention, and you're going to say, tomorrow we're going to potty train. And I would preferably do this over a weekend so that you haven't got school for at least 2 days, okay? Be very excited about it and say, look, we're going to do potty training because I know you can do it. You're a big boy. Of course you can do it. And when you can, these are the things that we'll be able to do because you are potty trained, because we're looking forward to school and we're doing this and we're doing that, and you're going to tell him all of this. When you wake up in the morning, you're going to be a woman on a mission. But you're going to be a woman on a mission who is going to recognize that you have to follow through on that. So, yes, he goes into big boy pants. He's wearing underwear. Okay? Let him choose. You go and buy the packs. Let him choose which ones he wants to put on. It doesn't matter to you. Okay, he's got his potty or his training seat, and you are going to have to, and this is one of the big mistakes that parents make with children. They ask their child. They know that they've drunk like a couple of cups of water during the day, and they'll say to them, do you need to go potty? And the child is always going to say no, because the child wants to be busy doing what they were doing, and they don't want to lose what they were doing, the focus. Maybe they were playing with somebody. They're scared that if they go to the toilet, when they come back, it's not going to happen anymore. Don't ask. Tell them. And this is how you tell them. Hey, buddy, come on, let's go off to the toilet, because we need to go potty now, because we're leaving in a moment, so we want to make sure that we're all empty before we get in the car.
I want to chime in here, and Lauren, thanks so much for your call. I want to come all the way back to Lauren here, Joe, and not Lauren per se, but parents in general. So we started with Lauren needing permission to take a breath. And you and I both heard all of the anxiety in her voice around this, the anxiety, the frustration, so on and so forth. So I would strongly suggest to Lauren and other parents like this, take care of yourself here. You know, just rest. Don't approach this with all sorts of anxiety. It's not going to be 100% successful right out of the gate. Just take care of yourself in this process, because if you approach your child with all sorts of fear and anxiety, I mean, they're like emotional tofu, Joe. I mean, they'll just absorb your anxiety and react accordingly.
That's true, Dan, but it is easier said than done when you're a parent who sure. feels like they have exasperated everything. So to confirm what you are saying, what I would say to you is sit down for a moment and recognize where you have been with your little one and recognize where you're at now and say to yourself, how productive is this? Because I've now got to a place where he knows I'm unhappy and I'm frustrated, and now he's using that as leverage because he's resisting and he's strong-willed, and now it's like the two of us are banging heads. So as the adult, somebody has to change their behavior, which means it's going to be you
exactly.
as the mother.
Exactly.
And when you reset that dial, you reset it knowing that you can never go down that same pathway that you did before, which was to start getting frustrated, to then get antsy, to then become intolerable with the behavior, to then start losing your patience, to then start having that tone. It means that there's a level of discipline and composure that's going to have to come from you, where you're firm but fair. So when your child does first wet their pants when you know they should not, you will look at them and say, "Oh, that wasn't a good idea, was it?" No, where do we need to do this? Now, can you hear my tone?
Yeah.
You know, I'll turn around and smile and say, "Well, that wasn't really good, but what do we need to do? Come on, you know better than this. Come on, off we go." It's fair.
Exactly. It's a different kind of attitude you're approaching it with. If you're just tuning in, that voice you hear is parenting expert Joe Frost. She was the star of a reality TV show called Super Nanny. She's now quite the author. She's written 4 books, and her most recent is called Toddler Rules. Hey, if you've got a toddler, or even someone older than a toddler, because I know Joe is working on a new show about older families, give us a call, 888-477-9499. We are here for parenting questions at 888-477-9499. Well, I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family right here on WHYY FM.
Does your son or daughter come home drunk or high? Would you like to learn new ways of dealing with their drug or alcohol use? The Family Training Program works with parents of children aged 12 to 25 to help them maintain control of their child's drug or alcohol problem. Held in Philadelphia and the Main Line by the Treatment Research Institute, a supporter of WHYY. More on the Family Training Program at 877-I-WORRY-2. That's 877-I-WORRY and the number 2. Or online at iamconcerned.org.
Devereaux is a proud supporter of WHYY. For more than 100 years, Devereaux has provided care to individuals with developmental disabilities and mental and behavioral health disorders. Devereaux's work also includes its full continuum of autism-specific programming for individuals of all ages, including residential services, community-based group homes, employment training, and support and educational programs. For more information on Devereaux's autism-specific services, devereaux.org.
We are back on Voices in the Family with parenting expert Joe Frost. Joe, on our last caller, she threw out a label that the preschool gave that child. And you and I, it sounds like we both agree, these labels aren't really helpful or informative. And I wanted to talk with you about ADD and ADHD. And you and I think, both heartily agree that it is overdiagnosed. But you've got some thoughts you write about in your book about helping a parent cultivate attention and focus in their toddler. How so?
I think it's important to understand, Dan, how vital early learning in a child's development is, and how key we are in being able to really ignite that brain power, as you will, or to ignite the electrical board in the brain of being able to make those connections and being able to develop. You know, the importance of that is really undervalued in today's society and families. And the importance of us being able to understand how and on a basis of every day at home or at school, in being able to teach them these skills, really will ultimately teach our children how to become better focused and how to expand their attention. And I think it's important that every parent understand that role in their children's lives, because I do believe, and I have seen too much, when this is not taught to the child, they then take their child to a pediatrician, and the pediatrician has the kind of checkbox, you know, the tick box in, well, my child's not sitting down for 5 minutes, my child doesn't even focus, now my child's not even listening, now my child's not, and they tick these boxes off, you know, to then give their child a label, and then before you know it, they're on medication. And all I'm saying is that as a parent, we have to understand the importance of our role in being able to teach our children these early stages of their development, so that we are not looking at those stages by the time they reach 5 and 6, you know, 4, 5, and 6. It's easy to be able to, as a parent, notice that these things are not happening. But how many of us parents understand that it is us that need to be able to teach our children these early developmental skills?
Before I go back to the calls, I have an observation that a lot of what you're asking seems like almost you're asking for a full-time parent. Here. And what do we do if there's two working parents, which is, you know, Joe, is not unusual these days?
I don't think that it's something that you wouldn't do when you're with your child, full-time or no full-time. At some stage, if you're both at work, your child is being left somewhere, whether it's with grandparents, an auntie, a nanny, a babysitter, a childcare assistant, you know, in a daycare center, that this is fundamental for every child.
Yeah, we think that what parenting is about is about self-sacrifice. Parenting is often about doing what's difficult and uncomfortable for parents, and doing it out of love for their child. Let's go to the phones. We've got a lot of people who want to join the conversation. We'll start with Elizabeth. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi, how you doing?
Okay, what can we do for you?
I have a 16-month-old who has the occasional temper tantrum, and it's fine, except he likes to throw himself on the ground and bang his head into the floor, and I'm worried about him hurting himself, and I spoke with the pediatrician about it, and he said to ignore it, eventually it will hurt him, and he'll stop doing it.
Ooh.
But he hasn't stopped doing it.
Ooh.
Can you identify when your 16-month-old does show you, because it's his way of communicating with you, can you identify what those reasons are? What have you mainly seen? Is he trying to communicate with you, or is it when he doesn't get what he wants? What is it?
It's two things. One is during transitions, so it's time to stop playing and sit in your high chair, or it's time to stop playing outside, it's time to go in. So that's one. So my husband and I have worked really hard at helping him with transitions, giving him lots of heads up, time cues, distractions, things like that, and explaining how much fun the next thing is going to be. And that's helped a lot, significantly cut down on the number of tantrums. The other reason he throws a temper tantrum is if he has something that might be dangerous. We've left out a ballpoint pen, and he has, and he's going to put it in his mouth and run around or something like that. So we need to take the pen away and explain to him that it's not safe. He'll throw a temper tantrum about that.
Are there any other things you're concerned about other than these temper tantrums? I don't want to minimize them, but other than these temper tantrums, does he seem okay? Is he walking and speaking and socializing well?
The temper tantrums last less than 20, 25 seconds. They're very quick. Oh. It's usually one or two bashes of the head, and then he's done. He gets up, he calms down, he walks over to you and wants to reengage.
Okay. So his understanding at 16 months, when they've learned that they can poke their fingers into things and jam CDs into DVD players, and the remote control seems absolutely fascinating. Mm-hmm. But the key thing for you to understand is that this is a time now of exploration, you know, when they're able to crawl and walk and to look at the world in a very different place. So first and foremost, baby proofing and baby safety is going to be very important to you. Get down on your knees, walk the living room literally on your knees or on their height, so you can start to see the things that do need to be removed, because there are certain things that we do need to remove that we realize are a little bit impractical to be in a home where we're raising a young child. First and foremost, do that. Secondly,
we've done that.
Right. So secondly, because a child is at the age of exploring, what will be important is to make sure that you have enough of those things going in to your child's life. Enough of being able to see that exploration, the water table, the play with the cups and the stackings, so that you're able to be able to have that time with him to do that, so that he learns how to engage in those early learning educational toys that will consume his attention and make him want to do it repetitively over and over again. The pen that you mentioned could be anything. Maybe it's a pad or a pen or a pencil that he shouldn't have. When you remove that, I would basically talk first and just say, not the pen, we'll have this instead. And when you actually exchange what he can have and remove the pen and he cries because he can't have it, the fact that you know it's only 25 seconds shows you that he doesn't like that it has come away from him and that he can't have it, but that it's not the end of the world for him. Okay, so he is showing you progress, that he's able to get past that hurdle very quickly. And what you will need to do, because he will outgrow it, your pediatrician is very right, he will outgrow. It's just when you know he's going to have that situation where he's going to bang his head, because we normally find children who bang their head, who don't show any other medical concerns, is a frustration. And they're unable to articulate, and so they get frustrated and they bang their heads or they, you know, kick their feet on the wall. It's just to make sure that you create that safe haven so that if he is going to do that, that he's not doing it on a tiled floor. He's not doing it on a place where he's going to hurt his head.
Well, that's where I wanted to jump in, because, you know, these are developing brains, and the more we're learning about injuries, the more cautious I become. So, yeah, do what you can to make sure he's not hurting that little developing brain of his. I sure hope what you heard from Joe was helpful to you, and I do hope you and your 16-year-old or 16-month-old are able to deal with transition.
Can I leave you with one thing? Can I leave you with one thing, if I just may?
Sure.
And this is another tip for parents. Is that when you see your child cry, know it's only because for that short 25 seconds they couldn't have what they wanted. But the good sign is that they get past the hurdle. So don't try and pacify. A lot of parents, when they see their child then cry, then continue the saga by saying, come on, it's okay, you can have this instead. Change the attitude and actually say, come on, let's play with this. Come on, up we go. Come on. Because you want to help your child transit from that place of being frustrated from not having the pen to being engaged with the objects you've given instead. So don't pacify the tears. Okay, move on to the next thing.
Joe, I want to ask you, we've only got a minute left, but I want to ask you about this show, this kind of work. Has it changed your life? And I ask you that because this radio show I've been doing for 28 years now has changed my life. Has your life changed as a result of your work?
Absolutely. Absolutely. In an incredible way. To professionally be in the parental arena for 25 years and to have been given the opportunity to help on this global scale absolutely has changed my life in a way that is so profound. And I'm ever so grateful to be able to continue to do my life's work, my mission in being able to really bridge the gap so that there is more understanding and to be able to talk to parents in layman terms that they can understand so that they empower themselves in the decisions that they will make and how they raise their families.
Really, I don't know about you, but for the work I do, I'm really left with a profound sense of humility and a deep sense of honor for the trust I'm giving, being given by the people I work with. It's just
absolutely overwhelming. And forever with appreciation and gratitude to the families who trust me, yeah, who are so open in being able to talk about their circumstances.
Well, how lucky we both are. Joe, I want to thank you so much for joining us
today
on the show. It's been wonderful, and best
thank
of luck
you
with all your future endeavors.
Thank you so much, Dan. Much appreciated.
Thank you. Joe Frost is our parenting expert, and her book is called Toddler Rules. Pick it up. Next week on Voices in the Family, we're going to be talking about returning female vets and all they have to deal with when they come home. Well, to download our podcast, we're at whyy.org/voices. Follow us at Twitter, we're at Voices in the Fam. And check out my webpage. It's drdangottlieb.com. I've got some new and interesting material on that. The engineer for today's show has been Adam Stanishevsky. Lucy Carfagno is our summer intern who just joined us today. Great to have you on the team, Lindsay. Elizabeth Perez-Luna is our executive producer of audio content. Emily Haas is our production assistant. Mike and Scott is our executive producer. Gita Simons is our producer. I'm Dan Gottlieb. Enjoy your week, my friends.